Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
This podcast is for entertainment purposes only and does not replace your own financial, tax, legal, or financial product advice.
Welcome to Millennial Property with John Pidgeon, and a shout out to my co-host, Emily Wallace. She is still on the mend today, so I am going solo, but I have a special guest. He's a long-time listener, and he was on the show, or My Millennial Money Show, back in September 2020. So if you want to check that episode out, it's episode 239. He's close to me in person, and he also works in our office as a buyer's agent. But we've got him on today as a ex-real estate agent. So he's going to talk about five tips to sell your property if you're in the market to sell your property, or you might think about selling your property in the future. He's got some outstanding tips for you. So without further ado, let's get into it. Marcus Davison, welcome to the show.
It's John. Yeah, good to be here.
Now, as I said before, you were on a couple of years ago and you spoke with Glenn and I about how to sell a property. Now, at that stage, you were a real estate agent on the Central Coast. You've since jumped to the bright side and you're now working as a buyer's agent with myself at Envisage Property, which is fantastic for me. But today, we're talking about how to sell your property. And I suppose you're an experienced investor, but you're an agent for a number of years. So talk to us about that.
Yeah, so correct, John. The shoe is on the other foot. So I've gone to the bright side and now buyer's agent, but it's good to have the background of sales as well and sort of know or get in the mind of how real estate agents work and being able to communicate with them day by day with the buyers and clients that we have and we're working with. But yeah, I've got five tips today and I'll get straight into it if you want. So I think the first one is, as a seller, you've got to actually think as a buyer. And what I mean by that is you've actually got to take, a little bit of emotion out of it, walk around your own property, and you may have been there for 5, 10, 15, 20 years, so there may be a bit of emotion caught up there. So I think just to have a good look around your own home, see what needs to be done around the home. If it's not too costly, as in time and money-wise, then that would be possibly something that you could do to get in to fix up, or possibly it may not need to be fixed up. So
Okay, so it's an interesting point that don't think as though you're just selling the property and not thinking about who's buying it. We're actually saying the opposite. We're saying, okay, listen to what maybe the buyer wants out there, because what we think will sell the house and what actually will sell the house can be completely different.
Yeah, no, 100%, 100%. And as I said, it's got to be worth it though. You don't want to go in and change a whole lot of stuff up. But if you think something small can be done and that will improve the home and get a better price for you, then I definitely think it's worth doing.
So on that tip, who would you speak to in relation to the improvements or the things that might need fixing before we start to list it with an agent? Because I imagine you're thinking about this before you've maybe engaged an agent. Would that be fair?
Yeah, and you probably did jump a couple of steps, because obviously the agent will be one of the ones that can give you some feedback around that. But I think if you've been a property owner and you've bought homes before, or even just to try and take a little bit of a personal touch out of that home, just so you're not getting caught up in, your emotions of you've been in this house for so long, I think it's worth this amount of money when where possibly might not be. So
okay, yeah. Cool. All right, so tip number one, think as a buyer.
Straight in number two, so engage a conveyancer. So you can't sell your house without a sale of contract, so obviously you need to do that pretty early in the process. It might only take a week or two, but you might need a couple of weeks to engage a conveyancer. So if you don't know one, there's plenty of online platforms out there. you know, obviously Facebook, or, you know, I'm sure you just do a local search of conveyances and you might want to interview a couple. Family and friends might have a conveyancer they could recommend. But, yeah, engaging the conveyancer would obviously be up there in the first couple of steps as well.
Okay, so for the listeners there who haven't done this before or haven't spoken or engaged with a conveyancer, basically their job is to look over the contract or create the contract as a seller in the first place, and then list in there the terms and conditions that you would like when you're selling your property, like settlement timeframes. Is it 42 days? Is it 30 days? Is it 90 days? Because we need time to move out and find another place and those sort of things. But the difference between a conveyancer and a solicitor is an important one too, because a conveyancer specializes in this contract viewing, whereas the solicitor is more, I suppose, qualified in a way to be able to look across any legal matters. So conveyancer, in a lot of cases, you would find as a cheaper option to have your contract assessed and created.
Yeah, I think 100%. I think they specialise in that field. So I would usually engage a conveyancer, and that's not to say a solicitor isn't able to do that same kind of work, but I think that's what the conveyancers do day in, day out. They're going to do the terms that are going to suit you and the sale of your property. So, yeah, I would definitely look at the conveyancing side first.
You and I had lunch with a conveyancer and a solicitor on the same table there a few weeks ago, right?
Yeah.
And the solicitor was able to look across different states as well to view contracts and to analyze and work on behalf of the client, whereas the conveyancer is usually only registered in the state that they're living in or working in.
Yeah, no, 100%. And it was a good catch up and to get some insight into that as well, which, you know, was a bit of light for me to understand exactly how the differences between the conveyancers and the solicitors can work, especially over different states.
Yeah, cool. Okay, so do your homework. Engage a conveyancer early. Might ring 2, 3, 4 firms, as Marcus said, and you might get some friend referrals or word of mouth referrals that have had good experiences in the past is always a good one.
Yep.
Cool. All right. Number three, what do we got?
Number three. All right. Well, possibly the most important one, but engaging an agent. So there's going to be plenty of debate around this one of how you go about it. And I think for me personally, if you're probably going to have to look over a few agents and possibly interview up to 5 agents, I would think. And the way to narrow this down is just a simple search. You know, you could get some, obviously, feedback from friends or family or whoever that may have dealt with agents over the time, but going through the interview process is a good way to determine if you, I guess, firstly get along with this agent. How is their communication? Are they giving honest feedback? What sort of results have they had in the past? What sort of experience have they had? So I think there's almost 5 steps in interviewing an agent you could probably do a whole podcast on, but the main thing is you have to feel comfortable, believe they can do the right job for you, have some honest feedback, especially around pricing, because you don't want to go in, get told it's worth a certain amount of money, and then 3 weeks, 4 weeks gone past, no offers, you're chasing the market down, especially in the market we're at in the moment in some places where, you know, prices have dropped. So you don't want to be in that position where it's on the market, gets too stale. So you actually want some honest feedback, and then you even want to have some honest feedback with yourself. And as I said in the first part was, you know, think as a buyer, you know, what would help sell this property, what will not help sell this property, and then work around that.
Yeah, okay. There's an awesome website called Rate My Agent, and you can jump on there and type in your postcode and it will come up with a list of agents that have performed well in your area, and that's as judged by the public. So that's a pretty honest feedback of agents in the area. But in your time as a real estate agent on the dark side, what was your niche, I suppose? What do you think made you stand out from other agents in the area? What did you want to do really well?
Honesty and communication was my biggest thing. So I wanted to go in with honest feedback. Now, whether I got engaged to do that property, it didn't really make a difference, because my integrity meant more at the time and still does than trying to just get a listing for the sake of getting a listing. So that's why I really think that honest feedback at the start, just so everyone's on the same page. It's hard to give honest feedback to a seller because there's, again, so much emotion wrapped up in selling your own property. You know, there could be a few circumstances around why you're selling that property. So, but I think at the end of the day, that always wins, that honesty. And I think communication as well. So if you go to engage an agent and their communication from the very start, like they're not getting back to you or they're not, you know, returning phone calls or text messages or whatever it is, then that's already a little red flag for me already. Yeah. So I think communication is key as well as honesty. And then, yeah, but that would be my two takeaways from when I was, yeah, selling probably.
Yeah, absolutely. And I can see that communication piece shining out in what you do for us at Envisage at the moment as well. Really important. That clear expectations and giving the seller some honesty is extremely important right at the start, isn't it? And more so from the benefit of the seller, because we've got a situation here at the moment where a friend of mine's selling a property and they've had it on the market for 8 weeks, and the expectation from the agent to him early days was higher than what I think he realistically could get in the market. As you said, the market's moved a little bit at the moment. So that vendor expectation versus the honest feedback from the agent, I don't think was there. And as a result, he's potentially wasted 8 weeks and a campaign where the average person's looking at that property saying, oh, there's something wrong with that property, or they're asking too much, or that we can go in hard for a discount. And I think it's back on the agent saying, well, they won the job or the listing because they gave this person the highest price, not the actual honest price.
Yeah, and on that, I think you can get away with that in a good market. Mm. So everyone looks good in a good market. Like you could tell them quite a big price and, hey, you might luck out and get it and you're the best in the business. But in a you know, falling market or a harder market, then that stuff goes out the door. And that's why the good agents will always last. You know, they'll have that honesty. They may miss out on a few properties, but they'll still be there, you know, 4, 5, 10 years down the track.
Yeah. And that probably brings it to another point. As you said, you could do a whole podcast on choosing an agent. But how long – a question to them is, how long have you been working for this firm? Like if you've been in the industry 20 years and you've had 10 different agency firms, I'm sorry, but you're not for me.
Yeah, 100%. I think that's – yeah, obviously experience is key. And if they've jumped ship, you know, in the last, you know, 3 years on three different agencies, then I'd be a little bit wary from the start. And I'd also say, though, some agents specialize in certain properties. So if you're sitting on a unit or apartment, or you're sitting on acreage or, you know, apartment, whatever it might be, there might be a certain agent that actually specializes in that. And that's someone who I'd also possibly interview around the process as well. So the type of property you're selling does make a difference.
Okay, cool. So engage the agent and ask some good questions. Tip number three. So number four, what do we got?
Let's go into presentation. So I guess this is going to come back for some feedback from the agent and just some honest feedback from yourself when you're in the property as well. So the presentation, so, you know, making sure lawns and gardens are maintained, making sure there's no, you know, holes in the wall, there's floorboards are fixed, or, you know, again, it's not something where you want to go in and keep putting your hand in your pocket and if it's not going to get the return. And this is where you need to discuss with an agent. And again, going back to that honest feedback from the agent, okay, do you think this is worth doing? Will this make a difference to my property? If I spend $10,000 here, do you think it'll get me another $20,000 or $30,000, $40,000 extra? So I think the presentation of your home is obviously key because, you know, first impressions matter, and even street appeal. So even someone just driving past and seeing the sign up, that's going to make a big difference. And if the lawns aren't done, the gardens aren't manicured, you know, the brickwork's all looking shabby, then I think that makes a difference. And buyers always look to how they can get a discount. So if you're not presenting it in a certain way, then buyers are already looking for a discount on that property.
Yeah, no, it's a really important one. And I think it's actually quite an easy one, isn't it, to mow the lawns and clean the bricks and make it look presentable. But it's often overlooked because it's too hard basket. So if you're thinking, oh, I can't be bothered doing all that, just think, well, it may actually create an extra 10, 15, 20 grand for you because of the way it presents, but outsource it and pay someone to do it and just factor it into the cost of doing business. But on the whole presentation piece, and I've got some mixed thoughts around this. Are we going vacant possession? Like if it's owner, occupier, investor, two different conversations, but are we moving everything out? or are we keeping furniture in there? Are we getting a stylist in to style the property? Like, where do we go and how far can we go with that?
Yeah, I think staging is definitely something that should be looked at more, because it can definitely make a difference. You obviously want to get rid of personal items, as in pictures around the place of the family, because you want a buyer to walk in and think, okay, I want to live in this home. I don't want a picture, you know, relatives that were here before us. So I think personal items are definitely something I get rid of. And then also the feedback from the agent about staging. And I think this is can sometimes be a hard conversation, because a lot of owners think, my property looks amazing the way it is. I've got it set up exactly how I love it, but that's how they love it. It may not be how the buyer loves it. So it's a bit of a hard conversation and another honest one, but I think a lot of the times it is warranted to have staging done.
Yeah, so would that depend on the value of the property that you're selling? Like, if you're selling a $3 million property versus a $700,000 property, like, do we go and spend more money because we're selling it for higher price?
Yeah, so if the heading's Renovator's Delight, well, then obviously you're not staging it too much. But, yeah, no, 100%. I think there might be a certain price point, and obviously getting in closer to the around the $1 million mark, it makes more of a difference. So if you're looking at cheaper property and that house does need a lot of work, well then possibly it doesn't, and you're probably going to sell it more to a flipper or a renovator, or, you know, maybe even a first home buyer that are happy to do some work to it. But yeah, you're 100% right. The pricing would work around the staging.
Yeah, okay. And finally on that point, what are your thoughts on virtual staging, which for everyone out there is basically saying, well, I look online, the property looks magnificent, it's got this beautiful lounge room, it's got a beautiful layout, beautiful colorings, all these sort of things, and we know it's virtual. So we turn up to the property and there's nothing in there.
Yeah, it's a bit of a tricky one, the virtual staging. I think it's similar to when the photos are done and they do a little bit of photoshopping with it, and you get there and the lawns look disgusting. They're all brown and dirt, and in the pictures they're nice and green. So virtual staging, I think online as a picture, I think I like it, because you can then see it in 3D, what it looks like, instead of you having to just look at a blank picture and then, oh, okay, I could put the dining table here or the lounge here or TV here. So I actually think online with virtual staging is pretty good. I don't even mind the 3D walkthrough, where you can move the camera in any direction, look up at the ceilings, look down the floors, walls. That's become a little bit more popular as well.
Yeah, yeah. Look, times have changed, haven't they, from the days where we'd read it in the newspaper that there's going to be an open home this weekend, and no internet as such, but showing your age. But that's four amazing tips for people out there that are wanting to sell a property. We'll take a break and we'll come back and finish this one off.
If you're after personal financial advice, don't get it from a podcast. If you would like help based on your own personal situation, head over to sortyourmoneyout.com, click Get Help, and we'd be happy to introduce you to one of our trusted advisors. We also have a panel of trusted mortgage brokers we can connect you with to get you into your first home, an investment property purchase, or to review your current loan if you don't have a broker. Our panel of advisors, mortgage brokers, and accountants work with clients all over Australia so they can connect with you wherever you are. That's sortyourmoneyout.com and click Get Help.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
All right, so just recapping, the first four tips for selling a property: think as though you're a buyer, number one. Number two, we need to engage a good, competent conveyancer. or solicitor if you desire. Number three, engage a competent agent that you can relate to and ask good questions to shortlist the agent that you're going to list with and don't just go on price. Number four is presentation and how we stage that property and the work we put in to make it nice and clean and presentable and appealing for someone that's going to buy your property. Last but not least, number five, and this is all in no particular order, as you can see, but what have we got for the fifth tip, Marcus?
All right, I've probably circled back a little bit here, but my last tip is no emotion. So taking emotion out of the sale of your own property. Now, a lot easier said than done, because everyone loves their own property or usually loves their own property and get caught up in it, and you put it on the market and you get a low offer and you freak out at the agent and, you know, you're already in the emotional roller coaster of selling your home. So you've actually got to try and just be a little bit non-emotional about it. And again, going back to thinking as the buyer and what would they want in this house would help take some emotion out of it as well. So yeah, I've circled back a little bit, but I think just try and take the emotion out of it so you're not getting caught up in the roller coaster of the real estate industry.
Yeah, okay. So I had a call with someone yesterday, reached out with a clarity call, and they were wanting to know whether they should sell their property in this market that's, I suppose, subdued a little bit and maybe readjusted itself. So we had to put things in perspective, because they'd bought for, I think it was like 320,000, and the expectations in the hot market, which was 12 months ago, was probably somewhere around the sevens, and they'd spent some money renovating it. So there's still some nice juicy profit in it, but as a result of the readjusting market, the agents are saying probably around the 650 to 660 now. So it's probably come back 40 or 50K from what the expectations were 12 months ago. So this really leans in on the emotional part of it. It's like, okay, we've put a lot of work into this. We saw it was worth seven. Now it's probably only worth 650. Do we now just throw the toys out of the cot and hold it for the next 5 years and wait for it to creep back up to 700? Like that's emotion 101, isn't it?
Yeah, 100%. And I wouldn't want to be in a flipper's shoes at the moment when they possibly bought 12 months ago and now it's a falling market. But yeah, 100%. If you've done some improvements to a property and now you're definitely caught up and I've spent this much money, I think it's worth this much money, I need to get this much money, you're pressuring the agent to get this much money. At the end of the day, and it's the old saying, but the market is the market and that's what price you're going to get. So if you put it out there, present it well, you're going to get what it's worth at that time. So take the good and the bad with that, whether your timing's good or bad. Again, as you said, that's the emotion of real estate and you've got to take that out.
Yeah. So if you're selling an investment property, I think it's a bit easier to stomach to sell for what the market's suggesting. But when you're selling your own rock, I feel as though there has to be some level of emotion in it, doesn't it? Because they're giving up this home that they might have lived in, as you said, for 20 years. There's emotions building up throughout the journey. They might be throwing out stuff that they've owned there for ages. They're cleaning up the property. They're thinking about who's going to be living in it, which isn't going to be them. There's the heaps of emotion. So it's a great tip to be able to say, remove the emotion, or at least reduce the emotion and apply some logic to it.
Yeah. As I said, easier said than done, especially if you have been in your home for a long time. And I totally get it. I've been in that situation and think my home's worth this and I only got that. So yeah, it is a tough one. But yeah, I think taking that out, taking the emotion out of it, out of the sale of your own home, will help a lot.
Okay, cool. So on that, and I suppose rounding this out, we always say time in the market will beat timing of the market. But at the minute, and you work through a lot of New South Wales and a lot of regional centres and capital city, etc., is it a good time to sell your property right now?
Oh, that's a big question, John. look, I think it's if it's a means to an end, then obviously, yeah, sell your property. If you're downsizing, you know, if you're buying and selling in the same market, then it makes no difference. So if that's the case as an owner occupier, if you're, you know, if you've got a big home, you're going to sell it and then you're downsizing to a smaller home, it's going to even out at the end. So I think it depends what you want to do. If you would have looked back, you know, 12 months ago, there was probably a lot of investors all selling because it was the height of the market. So so now we're seeing a little bit of lack of supply because the market has fallen a little bit. Investors are sitting on their hands a bit, and there's not as much stock out there. So I think it's pretty good
market to sell. Yeah, well, interesting, and it reminds me of something, a conversation I had with my young bloke this morning, Charlie. I turned on Sky News and to check the World Cup and the cricket results, and a stat came up that said property prices have dropped by 6.9%, I think it said. And Charlie took that and said, "Oh, Dad, that's a good thing." And I looked at him and I'm like, okay, this is interesting. He's 9 years old and he's thinks that falling prices are a good thing. And I said, tell me what you mean by that. He goes, well, it allows more people to get their own property. I'm like, well, that's very noble of you, mate. Mm-hmm. However, as a seller, we're saying, well, 6 months ago, we could have got 7% higher than what we've potentially got now. Now, obviously, they're global headlines and it's every property is different. But if we could time the market, ideally, we would want to be waiting for that to recover back up, but someone's situation may be different and they may be forced to sell. And I suppose that's the nature of the market. But your point about buying and selling in the same market is really relevant, isn't it? Because it is what it is. Like you buy something for 10% under, but you're probably taking a 10% haircut when you sell. So it evens out.
Yeah. So let me phrase it. Is it a market to selling? If you're an occupier and it's a means to an end, 100%. If you're an investor and you don't need to sell, then you might want to just sit on your hands for a while if you're getting a decent rent from it. Obviously, the rental market's pretty strong at the moment. Those prices seem to keep going up. Vacancy rates keep going down. Mm. So I think as an investor, depending on like obviously there's markets within markets, but I think as an investor right now, if you didn't need to sell, then possibly wouldn't. If you're an owner-occupier and it's a means to an end, you're downsizing, upsizing, whatever it might be, then I think it's a good time to sell. So probably dancing around the question a little bit.
No, that's good. as an agent, you're allowed to do that. Don't worry about that. But shout out to all the agents out there because, again, it's probably been a good 2 or 3 years for you guys in respect to selling property. Now things are a little bit different, aren't they? And I think the good agents will shine through and it may be harder to get listings. It may be harder to sell the properties. The properties are going to stay on the market for longer. Instead of the 14 days on the market, it might be 40 days or longer. So it's really they're going to earn their dollars over the next a year or so, aren't they?
Yeah, 100%. They're definitely working harder now, and even obviously in our field now as a buyer's agent, we're getting a lot more emails, a lot more calls, a lot more text messages. We've got a price reduction. We've got an off market. So yeah, they're definitely working harder. And as I said before, the honest and the good ones, the ones that communicate, the ones that have kept their connections, will always stay in the game and have good business over whatever market it is. But there'll be a couple out there possibly struggling, but you know, hopefully they'll work through it and work hard and yeah, keep going.
Fantastic. Great tips, Marcus. Five of the finest tips you'll see. So that's that, but I'm going to keep you on because I've got a bit of data that I wanted to share with the listeners today that I came across just this week. And it's talking about, well, first of all, I'll explain where it's from. And it's a company called Charter Keck Cramer, who basically the largest independent property advisory firm in the country, which is quite a big deal because they're across residential, commercial, specialized, health and aged care, government, hospitality, childcare, the whole works. So they do a lot of research and present a lot of data to people. But it was interesting, and I've shared this with you this morning in preparation, but interesting what they were talking about in respect to overseas migrants. So the key highlights from the research that they've done is around 70% of overseas migrants enter the rental market upon arriving in Australia. The highest is in Sydney, 76% of renters, and the lowest is in Perth, 62% renters. So basically, the rental market is acting as an initial outlet for many overseas migrants, which makes sense. They get to the country and they say, well, okay, I need to live somewhere, roof over my head, might not have a deposit, we'll go and rent. So that absolutely makes sense. Sydney's the place they're going to most. But the next part is the interesting part. There's a consistent transition from renting into owning and from occupying apartments and townhouses into detached houses in the 20 years from the date of arrival. The greatest proportion of migrants make this transition between 4 to 7 years from arrival across all capital cities. Now, let's dig into the weeds on this. What they're basically saying, Marcus, is, well, okay, we come to the country, we rent in capital cities, nominally affordable, which is probably one-bedroom, two-bedroom units or apartments, which can potentially bring the vacancy rates down because the demand from overseas has now picked up because of the pandemic being essentially on its knees. But then they're quickly wanting to transition to housing in that, on average, 4 to 7 year period. So that can really play around with the vacancy rates, can't it?
Yeah, as you said, it's maybe a bit of a false economy around the renting and the vacancy rates because, yeah, they're all coming here. We've got our gates back open. The pandemic's over. Everyone's coming back in, needs a place to rent, and they're maybe only staying there for 4 to 5 years and then looking for a detached house possibly somewhere. And depending on whether they're renting that or purchasing that, they might even move out of the area. So obviously the stat says it's mostly in Sydney, but that doesn't mean that, like, they get jobs here, a lot more working from home. They might want to move to Central Coast, Newcastle, Wollongong, down South Coast. They might want to move out of the skirts of Sydney and still be able to work from home or do a slight commute. So then in the next few years, yeah, vacancy rates will be quite low through apartments and units. But then if you're looking long term, which we always do, especially as investors, then that might change over the next 3, 4, 5 years and you might be left with a vacant property.
Yeah, so it, I suppose I wanted to bring this sort of data to people listening in because we often have a short-term view of things and we go to places like SQM Research for vacancy rates and we can look at it right now in most parts of the country and we can say, well, sub 1% vacancies and 3% for listeners is quite a normalized vacancy rate market. 2% awesome, 1% outstanding, 5% is oversupply. So when we see sub 1%, it's like, okay, we've done our checks and measures. The 1% vacancy is fine. We can go and buy there or invest there, only to find that that can creep back up very quickly. So I suppose what we're saying is just be wary of the long-term trends of that and the migration in and the supply and demand in certain pockets of the country and more importantly, the inner cities within the capitals.
Yeah, 100%. And I think like the vacancy rate, like interest rates, like the real estate market, there's so many ups and downs when you look over a 10, 15, 20 year period. So to think that it's always going to be a sub 1% vacancy rate over the next, you know, 3, 4, 5 years would be quite silly. You know, if you look at history, everything's always gone up and down. So that's why you've got to make sure you do all your checks and balances at the very start, especially if you're an investor. And be able to, you know, forecast that in that, hey, I might have a slight vacancy here. But, you know, obviously at the moment, it's all happy days. Everyone needs a place to rent. But, you know, as you just said, we need to talk or think about long term. And obviously, as we do, we're always thinking long term.
Absolutely. Marcus Davison from Envisage Property, fantastic to have you on today. Wealth of knowledge and the great thing I like about you is you've been on both sides of the fence. As I said at the start of the episode, you've been a real estate agent, you're now a buyer's agent, so you get to see it from both sides and you've also been a long-time investor as well, so you're living and breathing it, which is really important. So if they want to find you, where are they going to find you?
I'm next to you usually, John. I'm sitting here in Envisage office. Yeah, so it's good to have my shoe on the other foot now and working as a buyer's agent and working alongside you and the team here at Envisage. But yes, I'll be here at Envisage looking for our clients. We've got a few clients on the go at the moment. So we better get back to work, eh?
We better get back to work, yeah. So if anyone wants to look at in buying investment properties in New South Wales or anywhere else around the country for that matter, just drop us a line, envisageproperty.com.au. Bit of an organic plug there. If you like what you hear, and you're a long-time listener or even just a first-time listener that's quite happy with what you've tuned into today, then feel free to give us a 5-star rating. We always appreciate the feedback on that. But until next time, we will chat to you soon.
We acknowledge the Awabakal people, traditional custodians of the land on which our studio sits, and pay respects to their elders, past, present, and emerging. We extend that respect to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples who may listen to our podcast.
Taking your property journey to the next level starts with education.
That's why we make this podcast, but we've also created online courses to equip you with the knowledge you need to take the next steps.
I've created the Solvair Online Academy, open to both first home buyers and seasoned investors, where I share my tips and experience from 20 years in the property space.
And if you're a first home buyer, I have the course just for you. Everything from pre-approval all the way through into your settlement and everything in between. How to place an offer, how to bid at auction, what to even look for at an open home, and what questions to ask the agents. It's all covered in my online course.
Follow the links in the show notes to sign up and get started today.
This podcast is for education and entertainment purposes. Any advice is general financial advice only, which does not take into account your objectives, financial situation, or needs. Because of that, you should consider if the advice is appropriate to you and your needs before acting on the information. If you do choose to buy a financial product, read the product disclosure statement, target market determination, and obtain appropriate financial advice tailored to your needs. Symo Interactive Proprietary Limited, the publisher of the podcast, and Glenn James are authorised representatives of Money Sherpa Proprietary Limited, which holds financial services license 451289.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.